Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Ezra chapter 7. I'm going to do the entire chapter, verses 1 through 28. I will entitle this chapter, Ezra is Sent by Artaxerxes to Jerusalem to Teach the People. Our context is this. In chapter 6, our previous chapter, we saw that the temple had been finished and rededicated in 516 BC at the urging of Haggai the prophet, who sometime before 520, shortly before 520, urged the people to continue their work and to finish the temple, which they did. Well, that was 516. Now we are in 458, which is a good bit of time later. And so we start now in Ezra 7, verses 1 through 5. Now after these things, the things that I just talked about, the reestablishment of the temple, in the reign of Artaxerxes, who ruled from 465 to 424, king of Persia, there went up Ezra, son of Seraiah, son of Azariah, son of Hilkiah, son of Shalom, son of Zadok, son of Ahitub, son of Amariah, son of Azariah, son of Meraioth, son of Zerahiah, son of Uzzi, son of Buki, son of Abishua, son of Phinehas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron, the chief priest. Well, here we have a long genealogy of the man who wrote this book, Ezra. The year is 558 BC because it states later on in the chapter that it's in the seventh year of the reign of Artaxerxes, and Artaxerxes started ruling in 465. 465 minus 7 is 458, and that date is almost universally attested to by the people who talk about, the Bible teachers who talk about this topic. So 458 is a pretty strong date. This is a gap of 57 years or so since the completion of the temple in 516. As I said, a good bit of time has passed. Now let's give a brief history of the preceding Persian kings before Artaxerxes I. I'll start with Darius I. His rule began in 521, a year before he issued the decree, or about the same time that he issued the decree to begin the rebuilding of the temple again. The temple foundation had been laid in 536, and the people had gotten slack because of opposition from neighbors and because they were too busy working on their own houses. And so from 536 to 520, no work was done on the temple. Then Darius issued a decree right around the time he took over, about 521 BC, say 520, and then the Jews went back to Israel and started working on the temple again. So Darius ruled from 521 to 486, and in 490, his generals got whooped at the famous Battle of Marathon, which saved Western civilization from Eastern civilization, the Greeks and the Persians. You recall that story. Well, after Darius I died in 486, his son Xerxes ruled for 20 years from 486 to 465. And of course, Xerxes is famous for the next two battles with the Greeks, the Battle of Salamis, the Battle of Plataea, both of which the Greeks won, and the mighty Persian Empire under Xerxes reached the nadir of its honor and glory, got beat by that tiny little rump kingdom of the Greeks. But Xerxes is also famous for Christians because of the Book of Esther, because Esther married Xerxes. She wasn't the only wife of Xerxes, but she was the Jewish wife of Xerxes, and you know the story of Esther. So that happened between 486 and 465. So Esther happened between Ezra chapter 6, finishing of the temple 516, and Ezra chapter 7, 458, when Ezra goes to Jerusalem. So between 516 and 458, the events in the book of Esther took place, which we will get to in our series of podcasts. So Xerxes ruled all the way to 465, and then he died. And then his son, Artaxerxes I, ruled from 465 to 424. Now, why we want to remember Artaxerxes I is because he issued two decrees relevant to the Jews living in Jerusalem and also relevant to the discussion of Daniel 9 and the 70 weeks, which we will get to when we get there. And so all of these kings are important. It's important to learn the dates of their reign and just a little bit about what they did, and it'll make the study of Daniel a lot easier when we get there. Now, Ezra is said to be the son of Seraiah. Well, Seraiah was the high priest in Jerusalem when Jerusalem fell and was burnt to the ground in 586. We read about the demise of Seraiah, the chief priest, in 2 Kings 25, verses 18, 20, and 21. The commander of the guards, that was Nebuchadnezzar's military official, Nebuzaradan, the commander of the guards also took away Seraiah, the chief priest, that's Ezra's father, Zephaniah, the priest of the second rank, and the three doorkeepers. Nebuzaradan, the commander of the guards, took them and brought them to the king of Babylon at Riblah. That would be Nebuchadnezzar at Riblah, which is north of Israel in the Orontes, on the Orontes River. The king of Babylon put them to death. That would include Seraiah in the land of Hamath. Again, that's up there in present-day Lebanon. So Judah went into exile from its land. So Ezra's got an interesting family. That's just his father. And then we have the list of all these names. Of course, we don't know who they are. But then we get down to Phinehas, the son of Eleazar. Now, Phinehas is the same guy that killed Zimri and Cosby in the plains of Moab right before Joshua took the Israelites into the Promised Land. So he's pretty famous. But I'm going to discuss him in context of his father, Eleazar, who's mentioned here in Ezra's genealogy, because Eleazar is mucho famous. First of all, who was Eleazar? He was one of Aaron, the first chief priest, one of Aaron's sons. Now, Aaron had four sons, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar, in that chronological order. Nadab and Abihu, the two oldest sons, were killed for using illegal fire and violating the Levitical prescriptions, and God zapped them with a fire that probably came out of the Holy of Holies and toasted those two. So that left Eleazar and Ithamar. Well, let's talk about Eleazar. He took over the high priesthood, of course, as soon as Nadab and Abihu died on the Exodus, when the Israelites were forced to go to the east of the Dead Sea up there in Moab. And you recall the story where the Moabites didn't want them to come through, and so they made them go around. And while they were there, the Moabite women and the Midianites who were allied with the Moabites, their women, started seducing the Israelites. Maybe it was religious prostitution. Maybe it was just good old-fashioned sex. I don't know. But at any rate, there was a man of Simeon named Zimri who was having his way with a Midianite woman named Cosby. And they were getting on in a tent. And then Eleazar's son Phinehas walks into said tent with a spear and stabs them, probably like a shish kebab. Caught them in flagrante delicto. So that's a pretty famous story. The zeal of Phinehas. Well, Phinehas is in Ezra's genealogy. And then, of course, Eleazar, Phinehas's father, was invested as high priest on Mount Hor when his father Aaron died. So Nadab and Abihu didn't get to take the high priesthood. They were killed before Aaron died. Then Aaron dies, and so Eleazar is the second high priest. That happened in Numbers 20, verse 28. Now, Eleazar, once he was invested, he helped Moses superintend the famous census in Numbers 26:3, the census of the people. Eleazar continued on after Moses died, and he helped Joshua distribute the land. And after Eleazar died, the high priesthood remained in Eleazar's family all the way till the time of Eli, during the time of the judges. You recall Eli, who brought Samuel up in the temple or the tabernacle up there at Shiloh, who had two lousy sons, Hophni and Phinehas, who got killed by the Philistines. Well, the priesthood in the time of Eli had shifted at some point before from the house of Eleazar to the house of Ithamar. Remember, Ithamar was Aaron's fourth son. Now, the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia says that it is unknown why the high priesthood passed from the family of Eleazar to the family of Ithamar. We don't know, but at the time of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas were of the house of Ithamar, and of course, they blew it, behaving terribly, getting drunk, fornicating with women at the door of the temple, and so forth. Well, at any rate, the priesthood passed down from Eli all the way to Solomon in Ithamar's house. Now, we get down to Solomon's time. Solomon, you recall, began his reign in 970 B.C. So we get down to Solomon's time. Ithamar's house is still ruling, and then Solomon's switched the priesthood back from Ithamar's house, back to Eleazar's house, Eleazar being the third son of Aaron. So we read that in 1 Kings 2, verses 26 through 27. The king, that's Solomon, said to Abiathar, Abiathar was of Ithamar's family, Abiathar the priest, go to your fields in Anatoth, even though you deserve to die. I will not put you to death today, since you carried the ark of the Lord God in the presence of my father David, and you suffered through all that my father suffered. So Solomon banished Abiathar from being the Lord's priest, and it fulfilled the Lord's prophecy he had spoken at Shiloh against Eli's family. So Eli was a bad boy, a bad man, or at least he was a weak father. He had two bad sons, and they profaned the high priesthood, but the punishment didn't happen till after the time of the judges, at the time of Solomon. Solomon gets rid of the house of Ithamar by abolishing Abiathar, who was of the house of Ithamar. So, who takes over? After Solomon kicked out Abiathar of Ithamar's family, Zadok of Eleazar's family takes over, 1 Kings 2:35. Then the king appointed Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, in Joab's place over the army, and he appointed Zadok, the priest, in Abiathar's place. And so now the priesthood is back in the house of Zadok in the time of Solomon. And if we look at Ezra 7, verses 1 through 4, we see lots of sons of Eleazar going all the way back to Ezra. So from the time of Solomon, which is 970 or so when he took over, to the time of Ezra, let's say 458, we're talking about 500 years, half a millennium. The line of Eleazar, the chief priesthood was in the family of Eleazar, and Ezra was in the family of Eleazar. So Ezra was a super priest. He had a great lineage, a great background, and we're going to see here that Artaxerxes considers him an expert in the law, in the Jewish law. So being a priest was in Ezra's blood. Now that genealogy I just read in verses 1 through 5 is of course abbreviated, like most of these genealogies are. Son of means descendant of, and it might be a grandson or a grandfather. A grandson or a great-grandson. We go down to Ezra 7:6. This Ezra went up from Babylon, that's in 458 B.C., and he was a scribe skilled in the law of Moses. Well, actually, Artaxerxes, I said Artaxerxes said he was a skilled Mosaic lawyer. Actually, Ezra says he was a scribe skilled in the law of Moses. Ezra describes himself as a scribe skilled in the law of Moses. I guess he's not bragging. He's just stating an obvious fact. Ezra was a scribe skilled in the law of Moses, which the Lord God of Israel had given, i.e. on Mount Sinai. And the king, Artaxerxes, granted Ezra all Ezra requested, because the hand of the Lord his God was upon Ezra. Now, Ezra is called a scribe. The Hebrew, I think here, is soper. The Hebrew word means recorder, a scribe, a secretary, a writer. And, of course, people who could write generally also taught, because they had the teaching materials in their hands. And so Ezra was a teacher as well as a lawyer, or a mere secretary who wrote things down. Now, Ezra had asked things of Artaxerxes. Artaxerxes granted him everything, because the hand of the Lord his God was upon him. And we can be assured that Ezra only requested things for Israel, not for himself personally. And I'm sure Artaxerxes the First appreciated that. But also behind all the natural reasons, there's the providential reason, the hand of the Lord his God, the hand of Yahweh was upon Ezra, and God was directing all this sovereignly, like he always does. We go now to Ezra 7, verses 7 through 10. Some of the sons of Israel and some of the priests, the Levites, the singers, the gatekeepers, and the temple servants went up to Jerusalem in the seventh year of King Artaxerxes, who ruled from 465 to 424. You take 465, you minus 7, you get 458. That's the date of Ezra's return. Ezra did not return alone. He had some priests with him. He had some Levites. And the Levites, of course, had singers, gatekeepers, and temple servants, people who managed the temple, repaired the temple, stored money in the temple, stored utensils in the temple, kept inventory. And then, of course, some Levites sang, and some people were doorkeepers to keep unholy people out of the temple or unauthorized people out of the temple. All those people. A lot of them came back in 458. Verse 8, Ezra came to Jerusalem in the fifth month, which is Ab, July and August. This is of the religious year, which was in the seventh year of the king. Again, that's where we get the 458 date. 465 minus 7 is 458. Verse 9, for on the first of the first month, he began to go up from Babylon. So he started his journey on Nisan the first. Nisan, of course, is March, April. He gets there in July, August, Ab the first, so from Nisan the first to Ab the first, we're talking about 4 months travel. Of course, he wasn't traveling alone. He had a lot of people with him. That might have slowed him down a little bit. But 4 months to get from Babylon, they couldn't go straight across the Arabian desert there. Now, they had to go north up the Mesopotamian Valley, then cut over along the route of the Euphrates, going northwest into Syria. Then they had to drop down north, maybe through the Orontes on Kulish, Syria, the Lebanese Valley. But at any rate, however he got there, it took him 4 months because the good hand of his God was upon him, which shows that God is looking after him the whole way, sovereignly, from behind the scenes. Verse 10, for Ezra had set his heart to study the law of the Lord and to practice it, and to teach his statutes and ordinances in Israel. Again, the purpose of study is to teach. No good teacher will study, 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 and then not want to teach it. That's just not natural, and Ezra was like all teachers. He wanted to teach it, and that's why he was going to Israel, to Jerusalem. We go now to Ezra 7, verses 11 through 12. Now, this is the copy of the decree which King Artaxerxes gave to Ezra the priest, the scribe, learned in the words of the commandments of the Lord and his statutes in Israel. Again, Ezra's not being very modest about himself, but he's just stating a fact. I'm sure he's not trying to brag about himself personally. Verse 12 starts the quotation of the decree. This is the third decree of the relevant Persian decrees, the first decree of Artaxerxes, 458 B.C. Artaxerxes, king of kings, to Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of the God of heaven, perfect peace. Let me review these four decrees that I just mentioned, the four Persian decrees which were relevant to the Jews living in Canaan. The first two decrees were this, the first decree being Cyrus the Great's decree. In 539, he said, go back and build the city and the temple. The second decree was in Darius the First reign in 520. Cyrus the Great ruled from 559 to 530, and then Darius the First ruled from 521 to 486, and in 520, Darius the First issued his decree, which confirmed the Jews in their right to restart the rebuilding of the temple. And so then we have this third decree, which sends Ezra back to teach the people in 458 B.C., and the fourth decree of Artaxerxes, who ruled from 465 to 424. The fourth decree was the decree that sent Nehemiah back to Jerusalem to repair the walls of Jerusalem. That was in 444. Now, this third decree, the one that we're talking about now that sent Ezra back in 458, there's no reason given in the scripture here why Artaxerxes gave that decree. Speculation is this, he probably gave it because Ezra had asked for official permission to take a group of exiles back. He probably had good favor with the king. Remember, Ezra is a big shot. The ability to write back then was rare. He was probably serving Artaxerxes, and Artaxerxes says, sure, go back. You've rebuilt the temple. You haven't rebelled from the Persian kingdom. You've sent your tribute in. No problem, Ezra. Go on back. And while you're there, you can build a temple and offer some offerings up to Yahweh to pray for me so that I don't get assassinated in my sleep. We go down to Ezra 7, verses 13 through 16. This is still the quotation of the decree. And now I have issued a decree that any of the people of Israel and their priests and the Levites in my kingdom who are willing to go to Jerusalem may go with you, Ezra. Forasmuch as you, Ezra, are sent by the king, by Artaxerxes and his seven counselors, to inquire concerning Judah and Jerusalem according to the law of your God which is in your hand, and to bring the silver and gold which the king and his counselors have freely offered to the God of Israel, whose dwelling is in Jerusalem, his temple, with all the silver and gold which you find in the whole province of Babylon, along with the freewill offering of the people and of the priest, who offered willingly for the house of their God which is in Jerusalem. Now we see that Artaxerxes told Ezra to go about and see if things in Judah or Jerusalem are going according to the law of your God, which is in your hand. In other words, according to the law of Moses, is everything being done okay? Well, I'm sure Artaxerxes didn't really care about that so much, but he knew that Ezra did, and so that's why he's saying, I'm sending you to do what you wanted to do, Ezra. And in verse 15, he also mentions monetary things, financial arrangements. Artaxerxes wants Ezra to bring silver and gold to Jerusalem. Now, there were three sources of this silver and gold. This is according to the Cambridge and Colin Dillich commentaries. The first source we see in verse 15. Artaxerxes and his seven counselors gave some contributions of gold and silver. Verse 15. Bring the silver and gold, Ezra, which the king and his counselors have freely offered to the God of Israel. So, isn't that nice? A pagan king is offering money to Yahweh. And you notice that Ezra took it. That reminds me, my grandmother was a devout Baptist, and she was upset because some church-going hypocrites, people who don't really believe in Jesus, but they were good Baptists too, cultural religion, of which we are full of here down in the Bible Belt in the South. Well, this guy gave, I guess, $1 million to the First Baptist Church New Building Fund, and my grandmother was saying, this is terrible, the church shouldn't have taken it. And I remember thinking about that, and I said, well, you know, the money spends. take the money and build your church building. Of course, after that, I began to not believe in church buildings at all. But she was concerned that this millionaire would have control over the church, which I'm sure he did. And that's why I don't believe in giving big money for building projects of churches. I think it leads to bad stuff. But here, Ezra took the money, even though it had a pagan source. So I guess we cannot say apodictically, without exception, that it is wrong to take pagan money. Well, that wasn't the only source of pagan money. That was the first source of the silver and gold. But now, in verse 16, we have gifts of the king's subjects in Babylon giving silver and gold. Verse 16, Ezra, take, go with all the silver and gold which you find in the whole province of Babylon. In Cambridge Commentary and Colin Dillett say that's the gifts of the king's subjects in Babylon, the pagans. Ezra didn't turn that money down. Verse 16, the third source of silver and gold was the freewill offering of the Jewish people. Verse 16, Ezra, go with all the silver and gold which you find in the whole province of Babylon. That's the pagans, along with the freewill offering of the people and of the priests. That's the Jewish people who offered willingly for the house of their God, which is in Jerusalem. So three sources of silver and gold. One, Artaxerxes and his counselors. Two, the pagan Babylonian subjects in Babylon. Three, the freewill offerings of Jewish priests and the people. Now, this is one more example of God's using heathens' money to advance his purposes, because two of those three sources were from the pagans. Well, Cyrus, in his famous decree, 539, he had already made provision for the support of the temple. Ezra 1:4, let every survivor, that means every returning exile, let every survivor, wherever he lives, be assisted by the men of that region, wherever in the region of Babylon that this person lived. Actually, it's not a returning exile. It means a survivor of the destruction of Jerusalem in 586. They had gone to Babylon in exile. So this every exile, not returning exile, but every exile. Let every exile, wherever he lives in Babylon, be assisted by the men of that region with silver, gold, goods, and livestock, along with the freewill offering for the house of God in Jerusalem. So Cyrus says, okay, Jews, fork it up. Well, that wasn't pagans, really. But the pagan Cyrus is the one who got the offering up. So you could say that the pagan is helping God with the people of God's finances. We also read in Ezra chapter 1, verses 7 and 8, this, King Cyrus also brought out the articles of the Lord's house that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from Jerusalem in 586 and had placed in the house of his gods. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon had gotten whumped by the Persians by Cyrus in 539. 586, Babylon was ruling the Mesopotamian Valley. 539, the Persians were ruling. Well, Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon had taken all of the articles out of the temple in Jerusalem, put them in his temple there in Babylon, and King Cyrus says, we're going to take all those Jewish utensils and give them back to the Jews and let them go back to Jerusalem. Verse 8, Ezra 1, King Cyrus of Persia had brought them out under the supervision of Mithridat the treasurer, who counted them out to Sheshbazzar, the prince of Judah. So from Persia to Judah. So again, we have a pagan king giving money. And that was a lot of money. A lot of money that King Cyrus owned, gave it to Ezra to take back to build Yahweh's temple. Isn't that interesting? God is despoiling the, kind of like he despoiled the Egyptians on the way out when they started giving out their quote unquote free will offerings to the Jews. Get out of here. Get out of here. Your plagues are killing us. So take our money. Well, once again, God can take the wealth of evil people and use it for the benefit of his people. Also, we remember Darius I when he issued the second of the four relevant decrees in 520. He had said that temple expenses were to be borne out of taxes on the province beyond the river, that being Syria, Phoenicia, Ammon, Moab. Ezra 6:8. Aye, that's Darius I. Hereby issue a decree concerning what you must do so that the elders of the Jews can rebuild the house of God. The cost is to be paid in full to these men out of the royal revenues from the taxes of the region west of the Euphrates River, so that the work will not stop. So, in the northern kingdom of Israel, where the Samaritan polyglot population was, they had to pay taxes to help the building of the temple. And it was a pagan king, Darius I, who decreed this. Very interesting. We go now to Ezra 7, verses 17 through 23. Darius is still telling what he's going to do for the Jews in his decree. Starting with verse 17, then you are to buy with this money as many bulls, rams, and lambs as needed, along with their grain and drink offerings, and offer them on the altar at the house of your God in Jerusalem. You may do whatever seems best to you and your brothers with the rest of the silver and gold, according to the will of your God. You must deliver to the God of Jerusalem all the articles given to you for the service of the house of your God. You may use the royal treasury to pay for anything else needed for the house of your God. I, King Artaxerxes, issue a decree to all the treasurers in the region west of the Euphrates River. Whatever Ezra the priest, an expert in the law of the God of heaven, asks of you must be provided promptly, up to, here's the limit, 7,500 pounds of silver, 500 bushels of wheat, 550 gallons of wine, 550 gallons of oil and salt without limit. Whatever is commanded by the God of heaven must be done diligently for the house of the God of heaven, so that wrath will not fall on the realm of the king and his sons. Well, here we see Artaxerxes being concerned about the sacrifices, bulls, rams, and lambs. And he says, along with the grain and drink offerings, he's still talking to Ezra in this decree in verse 17. He says, then you, Ezra, are to buy with the money, all that gold and silver I just talked about. Ezra is supposed to buy the sacrificial animals along with the grain and drink offerings to offer them on the altar. That's the bronze altar in the court of the priest in the front of the second temple. The bronze altar, of course, was the first thing the returning exiles had built, as we have already discussed in chapter 3. They built that before they laid the foundation of the temple in 536. Verse 18, Darius says in his decree, you may do whatever seems best to you. So Artaxerxes not only gave the Israelites money, he gave them discretion on how to use the money, which is pretty amazing if you ask me. Whatever you want to do, whatever seems best. Verse 19, Artaxerxes says, you must deliver to the God of Jerusalem, in other words, take it to the temple, all the articles given to you for the service of the house of your God. Now that refers to all the utensils and the other things that are in the temple that Nebuchadnezzar had stolen in 586, put in Nebuchadnezzar's pagan temple in Babylon, and Cyrus had taken them back out. I just read you the scripture in Ezra chapter 1 where Cyrus had done that. Let me mention that again. Chapter 1, verses 7 through 11, King Cyrus also brought out the articles of the Lord's house that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from Jerusalem and placed in the house of his gods. King Cyrus of Persia had them brought out under the supervision of Mithridat the treasurer, who canted them out to Sheshbazzar, the prince of Judah. Now, let me go a little bit further here. This was the inventory. This is what Cyrus had taken out of Nebuchadnezzar's temple that belonged to the Jews. 30 gold basins, 1,000 silver basins, 29 silver knives, 30 gold bowls, 410 various silver bowls, and 1,000 other articles. The gold and silver articles total 5,400. Well, that seems like a lot of stuff that's already been taken out of the temple by Cyrus, but there's apparently more, because Darius says, we got some more stuff that you need to carry back. Verse 19, Ezra 7, you, Ezra, must deliver to the God of Jerusalem all the articles given to you for the service of the house of your God. So apparently all of the articles for service in the temple had not been carried back by the returning exiles under Cyrus. There was still some left, and so Artaxerxes tells Ezra, take the rest of them back. Now, the taxes in the treasuries in the province of the river, the taxes that were to be spent on this temple were enormous, and it was an enormous amount. 7,500 pounds of silver, that's 3.5 tons. The NASB has 100 talents, but the Holman Christian Study Bible likes to put it in English units so that people who are used to English units can get the full impact of it. 7,500 pounds of silver, 3.5 tons, 500 bushels of wheat, 550 gallons of wine. Oh, boy, that's a lot of wine. Can you imagine how expensive that was? 550 gallons of oil, that would be olive oil. Can you imagine? And unlimited salt. Salt's not as easy to get back then as it is now. So this was an incredible financial boon that Artaxerxes had given to the Israelites. Why did he do it? Well, he says in verse 23, so that wrath will not fall on the realm of the king and his sons. These pagan kings were superstitious. They covered their bets, just like people in China will go into Buddhist temples and put their little notes in the tree leaves and say, I want prosperity. I want a wife. I want a husband. That kind of thing. I want a good job. They don't really believe in Buddha, but they're covering their bets. They're going to pray to whatever God might be out there just in case. And that's what Artaxerxes was doing. Now, notice that this arrangement, the taxation of the provinces, would make the local Samaritans, the polygot population that the Assyrians had used to displace the northern Israelites, the people living right to the north of Jerusalem, they would have to pay for the temple of the god they didn't serve. That sounds like American finances. I have to pay for sex change operations. I have to pay, well, I guess I still don't have to pay for abortions because the Hyde Amendment is still there. But there's a lot of stuff the government does that I ain't really happy with. So I sort of have a little bit of sympathy for the Samaritans having to pay for a temple of the god they didn't serve. Maybe they had a legitimate complaint. But we're not going to blame God for that, are we? Going to blame, if anybody, Artaxerxes. And it seems to me that the fact that they were having to pay taxes for something they didn't get the use of, it's kind of like me having to pay taxes to my local county public schools, which are absolutely a disgrace to the human race. And why would anybody want to send, if they could, get out of having to do it, why would they want to send their kids to these schools? I don't know, but I got to pay a lot of money for these schools, and I get no use out of it. And even if the schools were good, I'm old enough to where I don't have kids of the proper age to go to those schools, but I still got to pay for them. Well, that's what's happening to the Samaritans here, to the northern Israelites. They're paying for a temple that's not their temple. And I'm sure they're not happy, and I'm sure that might have led to more complaints or more opposition to the building of the walls that we're going to see in the book of Nehemiah. So we go now to Ezra chapter 7, verses 24 through 26. Darius continues with his decree. He's talking now to all the treasurers in the provinces to the west of the Euphrates River, the province beyond the river. He's talking to all the treasurers in the province beyond the river. We also inform you that it is not allowed to impose tax, tribute, or toll on any of the priests, Levites, singers, doorkeepers, Nethinim, or servants of this house of God. So the Israelites, or maybe not the Israelites, but the people who are coming in, well, it would be all of them, not just the ones that are coming with Ezra, but the ones that are already there in Jerusalem, they don't get taxed. Just amazing the financial advantages that the despised nation of Israel got here at this juncture of history. Now, of all the categories of Israelites that were mentioned in verse 24, most of them are obvious, except one I mentioned was Nethinim. Well, that's the New American Standard Bible translation. The Holman Christian Study Bible has temple servants, so that's really the translation we want to go with, the temple servants. Now, we read in verse 26 that Artaxerxes has told Ezra, whoever will not observe the law of your God and the law of the king. Remember, Ezra is a lawyer. He knows the law of Moses, and that means he can set up the judicial system in Israel or reform it if it was already there. I'm not sure that it would be there, but maybe not. But he would make sure that people were obeying the law properly. He would carry out judicial reform, in other words. And Artaxerxes says, let judgment be executed upon whoever does not observe the law of God properly. And the degree of punishment that the Israelites were allowed by Artaxerxes was death, banishment, or confiscation of goods, or for imprisonment, which is interesting because I didn't think they had jails back then. But what's really interesting is that the Jews got the right to enforce their own laws, even to the point of capital punishment. The Romans didn't allow them that, remember? But Artaxerxes did. That takes a lot of trust. We go down to Ezra chapter 7, verses 27 and 28, and we will be finished with this chapter. This is Ezra speaking now. Blessed be the Lord, the God of our fathers. Blessed be Yahweh, the God of our fathers, who has put such a thing as this in the king's heart, to adorn the house of Yahweh, which is in Jerusalem, and has extended loving kindness to me before the king and his counselors and before all the king's mighty princes. Thus I was strengthened according to the hand of the Lord my God upon me, and I gathered leading men from Israel to go up with me. Now notice that Ezra gives complete credit to God for making Artaxerxes so favorable. Ezra doesn't take credit to himself and say, oh, I was so persuasive, I persuaded him to do it. No, it's God that did it. Ezra knows who's ruling the show here. Now, verse 28, Ezra is said to have gathered leading men from Israel. That might have been difficult. It must have involved much personal contact and persuasion because, again, the leading men of Israel were probably leading a very happy life in Babylon. It's well known that the Jewish exiles to Babylon planted crops and built houses and did very well for themselves and prospered. But there's always people that are more interested in the law, the word of God, than they are interested in money. And so Ezra found those people and he took them back to Israel. And so with that, we have finished Ezra chapter 7. We're now ready to go to chapter 8 in our next audio, verses 1 through 36. We will see Ezra directing the priest and the Levites in his reform. Hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.